Hi, welcome. We're here at the Microsoft Virtual Academy to talk about transforming your SharePoint customizations to the SharePoint app model. I'm Steve Walker.
And my name is Vesa Jovonen.
And we want to, we've got a lot of modules today. sorry for that. We've got a lot of modules today. We're really focusing on how you can approach your transformation to the app model. There's a lot of folks who are very familiar with how to do full trust code, partial trust code using the very traditional models that we've all known and loved for years and years. We've actually been engaged with a lot of customers over the last, say, year and a half, helping them work through their transformations. We've come up with a lot of really good patterns and practices that we'd like to share with you guys and help you learn how to transition to the app model. With that.
So good. So my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a senior program manager in the Office 365 product group. I'm currently running multiple programs on app model transformation. And like Steve said, it's about transforming the existing functionality. So we don't actually, this training is more about how do we transform the full trust solutions or farm solution to the app model using then the app model technique. So how can I take a functionality like web template, and how should I do that in the new one? I'm also a core team member, or the lead of the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices program. You should check that one out. An awesome program with a lot of community contributions. We're getting a lot of stuff all the time. I've been closely involved within the SharePoint customization since the dawn of the SharePoint itself. I used to be a consultant in Microsoft Consulting Services, principal consultant, just before I actually moved in. And I moved into Microsoft joined Microsoft back in 8 years ago. So it's been a while. Been also a SharePoint MCM instructor for the whole life cycle of the master certification training, which unfortunately doesn't no longer exist. And there's my blog address as well, where you can find additional data on the blog information, or app model information.
All right. And I'm Steve Walker. There's my Twitter handle if you guys want to follow me. I do tweet a lot about SharePoint and the new app model. I'm a senior program manager on the Office 365 CXP team, customer advisory team. I am an ex-SharePoint cat and an ex-SharePoint ranger. So I worked in our consulting services for a number of years, working with some of our largest customers. I've been SharePointing a long time, just like Vesa has. And my new focus is on dev extensibility across the suite. But I do have a lot of passion about SharePoint. SharePoint has really always been the case else of Office development, especially when it comes to the server side. So with that, we will move into an overview of the course topics that we have for today. So transforming the SharePoint customizations to the app model. So first off, for this session that we're doing right now, is really just an introduction to the app model transition tasks. So to give you some level set to help you understand kind of the approach that we're taking. The second module really dives into controlling your branding in SharePoint using the app model. So very different approaches than you may have typically employed. And so we want to dive deep into the branding, because we know branding is important to a lot of folks. The next thing we're going to cover is module 3. We've got site collection and site provisioning with the app model. Then module 4, we've got UX components or user experience components, and then how to do site modifications using the app model. Module 5, we're going to talk a little bit about user profiles and personalization with the app model. So those are always very important when you're doing web content, being able to personalize those experiences to users. And so we're going to show you some new approaches that you can take for that. And then the very last module is really some best practices and learnings that we have had directly engaging with these customers on how to convert from what we did before with the full trust code or with the sandbox and moving it to the app model. So it's typically not a big bang, but there's some different approaches that that you can take. So just to set some expectations, we are making an assumption that you are familiar with what we've done in the past and the traditional approaches that we've taken for customizing and working with SharePoint from a development and extensibility perspective. Our target audience is IT pros, consultants, office developers, and Microsoft partners. So IT pros, just because you don't do development doesn't mean that you shouldn't be aware of what the best practices are and the approaches that your developers should be taking. So I think it's very important for IT pros to become familiar in this new world of moving fast, and you know, just like you were before with the farm solutions that you had to manage when your developers would hand them over. Our prereqs and supporting material, we really want you to be familiar with basic SharePoint customization. So we're not going to cover a lot of those things today. We're really going to jump into the app model side of things. So if you don't have those prereqs, I'd say brush up and then come back and watch these recordings later. All right. One little plug here for the MVA community. So if you are not a member of the MVA community, please go join. This is some great free online learning, and it's not just about SharePoint. It's all things Microsoft. There's a ton of Azure learning in there. There's over 1 million registered users. And you can earn while you learn. So you get 50 MVA points for this event. So we've got an aka.ms/MVA voucher link there. You go there, you put in SharePoint.js, and you get 50 points of MVA points. So jump on it. All right, so let's jump into the meat of it. So we're going to start off here with an introduction to the app model transition tasks. So the very first thing we're going to cover, an introduction. We're going to give you a technical introduction. We're going to talk a little bit about why you don't want to use farm solutions or sandbox solutions. And I know sandbox solutions is a little bit of a controversial statement. You'll hear Veza and I very much strongly leaning you away from those. And we'll cover that, why we're recommending that as we move through these modules. We're going to give some recommendations for app model implementations, so process and approach. So this is very much more how do you approach these transformations, and then what to consider in your existing farm solutions. So you may be continuing to develop in farm solutions today and updating those in your on-prem farms. So there are some approaches that you can take in those patterns that will make your future transformation easier. So let's talk a little bit about our vision. We do firmly believe that extending Office Everywhere is a core tenet of the power of the Office suite. So our users, your users, our users, our joint users, the billion users that use Office on the planet and use SharePoint, spend a lot of time working in those Office clients and spend a lot of time working in SharePoint. And so you as a developer, you as a stakeholder, being able to extend your line of business apps or extend your business functionality into the Office environment is very powerful from a productivity perspective. But we also believe that connecting to Office 365 services, so treating not just SharePoint, but our entire suite of Office 365 services as an API surface that you can use to integrate with your line of business apps. We've been doing that for a while on the SharePoint side. There's been things like the Exchange Web Services before, but they've used very different models. They've used very different authentication methods, and we're super excited about our O365 services in addition to the contextual apps that you can build. And then we're really committed to build using an open platform. So you can use the tools that are familiar to you, the tools you want to use. We think our tools are great, but if you're using PHP, you're using Ruby, you know, those types of things, all of these approaches that we're talking about today can be done with those tools. So super excited about that. So we're going to talk about some recommendations, and I'm going to turn it over to Veza because he's actually been driving in the meat of all of these customer engagements and has, I would say, on this planet, probably the most experience driving big customers to the new app model. So with that.
Thanks, Steve. So let's start with a recommendation, and thanks for the compliment. Definitely, there's a lot of people involved in this transition work, what we do. But let's start with the recommendation. And in every single slide, every single module, we have this kind of a one slide which is telling you the key points. And that's, we just wanted to have a one slider which is telling you what we're going to explain, and we kind of do a justification or the reasoning behind all of these statements. So the number one thing is to move gradually to the app model. So definitely the app model is the future within the SharePoint, and we want you in the cloud or in the on-premises gradually move into the app model. You don't necessarily have to do a massive jump directly to the app model. You can gradually approach that in hybrid scenarios or gradually application by application start to transition. But you will see us more and more doing investments in the app model side rather than the farm solution, full solution, or sandbox solutions. And that comes down on the aligning with the product roadmap. So definitely this is where we will invest heavily in the future as well. The app model is here to stay. This is not a one-time, one-version test. You've seen us releasing Office 365 APIs. That's aligned with what we're doing with the SharePoint app model as well. So it's definitely a functionality or direction which is there to stay. One of the key learnings, what we're also seeing all the time, is that when people approach the transition from the full-text code or from the farm solutions to the app model, they kind of tend to concentrate that using technical approach, and that's actually not what we recommend you to do. You should concentrate more on the functional. What is that farm solution there for? What is it actually offering for the end users? And then let's think about an alternative way of achieving that using the app model techniques. So it's a kind of a classic challenge that people go and have a look on the farm solution and whatever full text code solution I have. I have an HTTP module, I have a timer job. Can I do that with that model? Well, no, you can't. But you can achieve similar end result using just alternative route. And that's what we really, really want to help the community to understand. And there's a lot of information coming into MSDN related on these topics as well.
So it's not really about just looking at a one-to-one mapping of your components and saying, oh, well, I had this timer job before and now I need an app model timer job. Wait, there's no capability. I'm done. I can't convert. It's really looking at the feature functionality and trying to step away from that and look at what you're trying to accomplish.
And in many cases, you're just approaching slightly differently the customization, but from an end user perspective, it's exactly the same end result. So the end user wouldn't understand how we actually set the branding on the site, because the technology is kind of meaningless. As long as you get the right colors, as long as you get the right functionalities, the UX components, whatever needs to be there for the end user. Is it then server-side or JavaScript, or how is it implemented? That's absolutely secondary. And what we've seen is that when we take certain approaches, what we're going to go through today, maybe the end users don't even understand that there's a change. It might be looking exactly the same like it was in the server-side code, but it's implemented using that model techniques. So it's really, really important thing. Then the final topic is to avoid sandbox solutions. So we kind of talk about that one a few times today as well. But the sandbox solution, we already deprecated the code behind of the sandbox solution. Deprecation means that it's still supported, but it's already an indication that this functionality could go away. And in general, the sandbox solution will they have challenges related on, for example, people, if they deactivate functionalities, if they retract sandbox solution, that could actually cause some orphan objects, and there might be additional challenges. So that's really something we're going to mention quite a few times today and show you the reasoning behind of why you should be avoiding sandbox solution. And what is the alternative? That's probably one thing what everybody is looking for. Okay, if I can't use sandbox solution in Office 365, how would I then deploy my stuff? And that's definitely one of the key topics today. So let's move on the slides. So first of all, kind of a bullet frenzy slide, but full trust solution challenges. So it's kind of a justification why we're heading to the app model. Obviously, the full trust solutions, they usually when you deploy a full trust solution or a farm solution, you're deploying a feature framework elements like master pages, page layouts, whatever functionalities. And that means that the files are actually ghosted within the file system. It means that you have a all of the sites, even though they're using the file, they have a dependency on the file within the file system. And that solution package then to be there. One of the classic challenges within the enterprise scale is simply that this has an implication on a disaster recovery. Because you need to make sure that your database is in sync with the version of your WSP package or farm solution which has been deployed. Which we don't have this, let's put it this way, wouldn't it be just cool if I could take whatever content database, move it across to any environment, and it would work? And that's definitely one of the advantages of the app model. Deployment always causes downtime. one of the clear messages which we've been getting already since 2007. Why is this always causing downtime? There are a way to minimize the downtime, but there's always a downtime related on recycling the application pool whenever the farm solution has been deployed. And that then has a impact on service level agreements because you definitely have an SLA targets. And it might be that if you want to minimize that to near zero, you really need to invest on heavy infrastructure. Compared then to modify and deploy your customizations using the app model techniques. And we're going to talk about all of that during the day. One of the things with the farm solutions or full trust solutions is also the fact that they need to be closely analyzed. So you need to understand what are we actually deploying to the farm. Because that is in the name of the solution. It's a full trust solution. You need to trust that solution what you're actually adding to the farm. And quite often IT pros, they who own the farm, they don't really want those customizations there because they're not really sure what's going to happen. And so therefore there's a complex application lifecycle management. You have a test environment and all of that verification. Or if you're using a, let's say, hosting provider, you need to send that solution package for review. There's a negotiation going on, and then eventually you might get your customization installed if it's following the right guidance.
And there's been a huge amount of infrastructure and process and tooling that's been built by the community and by IT pros to kind of handle this. So we do have a pretty good handle on how you should be looking at these solutions, but there's always that risk, and that's why IT pros are nervous to deploy farm solutions. They want to make sure that they trust them. Did it come from a developer I trust? Is it introducing memory leaks? There's a huge QA process that goes into these large enterprise deployments. And so that's really the nature of why we don't support that in a large multi-tenant environment. This code runs in process on the server, and having the ability to inject your code inside of our code introduces all kinds of not just reliability problems, but also security problems potentially.
So. True. And that's kind of the final bullet point on the slide. It's not available in Office 365. And just to be clear, it never will be. We can't run your code in a full trusted mode in a hosting service. It's just impossible.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about all of that during the day as well. So obviously, then the question what we've been having every now and then from the field is, wait a minute, so you're pushing so heavily the app model. Are you going to then deprecate the farm solution or full trust solution as well? And the answer is no. No, this definitely not. So this is something which we will support in the on-premises until the future of the SharePoint, whenever the SharePoint will resign. I don't know if that's never going to happen. But definitely fully support it. We just want people to align where we are making the biggest investments from a customization perspective. Moving on, what about then the sandbox solution? Like we mentioned in the introduction, so the code behind of the sandbox solution is already deprecated. Deprecation means that it's still supported, you're able to do that, but at some point that functionality might go away. But it clearly shows the indication or the direction where we're heading with the sandbox solution. One of the challenges with the sandbox solution is that definitely that there's no centralized control. And this is a classic challenge, especially with the larger enterprises, because they don't want individual site collection administrator to mess up their sites, and then they call it the support, and that is causing additional costs. So that has been a kind of a classic challenge. There's a possible orphan issue with the deactivation. So as a site collection owner, usually the project managers who request the site and their site collection owners, they could go actually and deactivate the sandbox solution. And that in many, many cases, that will cause challenges related on what did we deploy, how did we clean that from the site, were we able to clean up in the site if there was a dependency on the content and all of that. And also the final thing is that when you create sandbox solution, it really requires a deep understanding of SharePoint isms. So you kind of need to understand the feature framework, the XMLs, the schema XMLs, and all that complexity, which is not necessarily a good thing. It's a good thing when you know that.
Right. I would say it's a good thing for folks who have spent the last 10, 12, 15 years working with SharePoint and learning all of all of that. But if you're bringing a new dev onto your team, that's a huge learning curve for them to understand how to approach that and what those various SharePointisms are. This new app model is very much more aligned with what folks coming out of college and a lot of our younger devs are familiar with, let's
sure.
just say.
Sure. And you don't have to then spend time on that area at all. So that's definitely a good thing. So, and that's actually one of the questions which we then quite commonly said, communicate when we talk with the customers and partners. That, no, wait, you're saying that no feature framework. You're saying no sandbox solution. Wouldn't that mean then that no feature framework? And the answer is actually that is correct. We're heading more and more into the direction where we don't use the feature framework as the tool for deploying the stuff on the site. We're rather using the REST or CSAM APIs that then configure the site. Deployment of the files and all of that would be then easily doable as well using the client-side object model. So definitely one of the key topics today is to show how can we do this stuff without the feature framework. Moving on our thing, so if you think about as a summary on what we just went through, we still have kind of a three different sections on three different ways of supported customizations. We have the farm, solution, we have the sandbox solution, and we have a SharePoint apps as an option. The sandbox solution will gradually go away, code behind has been deprecated, and that kind of clearly shows the direction where we're heading with the sandbox solutions. The SharePoint app is then the where we will invest heavily in the future in many, many different areas. And the key point here is that don't get fooled on the terminology. Even though we say SharePoint app, it's actually app model. And the app model means client-side technologies. It's not necessarily only an app part. There's multiple different ways of using the app model technologies within a SharePoint without actually even deploying apps to the sites. And that's definitely, again, one of the key discussion points during today, showing you the different techniques, how to utilize the app model technique, app model approaches, without even deploying apps to the site as such, which is definitely what we're seeing many of our customers who are doing the transition are using as well. This is a high-level process. We're going to talk slightly more about this one in the module 6 related on the transition on the app model. But this is something which we're using with our within our internal projects or external projects with the largest customers, what we have, as a phasing or the steps when we think about the app model transformation. Obviously, we need to have a step number one, which is the readiness. So the people who are involved, they need to understand the technology, have a look on these videos, understand different options. Customers need to make a hosting decisions. Are they going to use Windows Azure or Microsoft Azure on premises, Amazon, whatever alternative approaches? All is definitely doable. The second stage is then the solution assessment, which essentially is that we assess and have a closer look on those full-text code solutions, that what are they actually doing? And the key point, what are the requirements? Not only the technical analysis of the farm solution, just also the business requirements. What is the functional requirement from an end-user perspective? And then as a third step, the solution planning. And we kind of find it really helpful to run through the steps 1, 2, and 3, so that after the solution planning, you have a high-level picture on what kind of approaches I need to take, what is the high-level, let's say, estimate to do a transformation for this particular solution package. And then there's the divider, where before we actually start making the work. And this is where you can then do real estimates based on the direction where the app is heading. You can do multiple app solutions analysis at once and then maybe realize that, okay, we can combine many of these to a single provisioning app as an example. And then in the development and testing phase, you actually implement the stuff, you do detailed technical planning, all that detailed technical level of stuff. You implement the stuff, you test the stuff. After that, you could do the deployment of the app to the environment. You're transforming the content, one of the key topics we're going to talk about in the module 6. And then you retract the solutions. And if everything goes well, obviously, well, if not only if everything goes well, if you do the stuff well, your sites will be still working and you transform your existing customizations to the app model with the content within the site as well. So it's not just the greenfield installations. We need to think about also, let's say, converting the existing content if needed. Yep. But we're going to spend more time on this process on the module 6. This is more about the introduction on the transformation task. Good. Quite a few times mentioned already, concentrate on a functional requirement, not on the technology. Really, really big learning. People tend to fall back on just really concentrating just on a technical side. This is what we had in a farm solution. Therefore, how do I do that in the app model? And that's really not the case. You should concentrate. Obviously, that's one really important step to do. You need to have an inventory of functionalities, inventory of web parts, and then understand, is there an HTTP module? There is, but there's no comparison for the app model, which is absolutely fine. So then we go back and start thinking, what is that HTTP module or the timer job actually doing? And then, okay, it is collecting data based on the site collections, collecting, for example, storage data. What about if we run that timer job outside of the SharePoint in a Windows Azure or wherever, and do we have those APIs available, what is needed to fulfill the requirements? And quite often we actually have. And based on your input, based on your feedback, we are obviously exposing additional APIs all the time, which is really important. And we need your input on this one. Yep. Moving on to the app model practices, and I'll let Steve do the honors on this section.
All right, thanks. So let's talk about a few of the practices that we have come across as recommendations. So first, we want to talk a little bit about the impact of your customizations and the ways that you want to look at the impact of your customizations. And so we've seen, I've personally been involved in a large number of engagements where people built things just because they could, and maybe there wasn't enough business value in the long term once they understood the operational costs or the availability challenges, or maybe the long-term roadmap impact. I myself have built huge solutions for customers that had many, many, many pieces of SharePoint that were totally replaced with farm solutions just to achieve the business need. And, we spent multiple millions of dollars building these solutions. And then 3-4 years later, the business wants to upgrade. Guess what? We get to do another multiple million dollar project to upgrade that code. And so using these remote patterns, remote practices, and sticking more to the out-of-the-box things rather than replacing our controls, replacing our artifacts, then you'll have a much lower bar for upgrade. And if you think about Office 365, we own the upgrade. You don't own the upgrade. And so,
and also maintaining all of the other functionalities as well, right? So it's not just an upgrade. It's just that quite often business comes back and said, yeah, that was cool, but actually we want to do X and Y and Z.
Right.
We want to change that. That was really cool. But then you start thinking, I need to do some really deep level upgrading whatever functionalities on the deployment.
Yeah. So with that, we'll move over and we have a nice slide that kind of talks about redefining the application models for SharePoint. So there's obviously the classic full trust solutions. Again, as Veza stated earlier in the presentation, that's not going away. If you're building on-prem and you have a valid reason for needing to use these farm solutions, then absolutely still supported, still a way to go. We have a lot of ISV solutions out there that are built this way. We have a lot of platform customizations that people do. We've even seen people do custom service applications, which are pretty cool. Custom WCF services, those things. You'll notice the X over the Office 365. That is not supported in Office 365, will not be supported in Office 365. Then we move to what we call, and Vez and I like to call, client-side solutions. So these are really server-side controls as JavaScript on page layouts and master pages. You can do remote provisioning for elements, embracing this unghosted model. So really just using our APIs to interact with SharePoint through the API surface, rather than deploying your artifacts directly into the file system of SharePoint. And then we have SP apps over on the right. So app catalog-based solutions, we have packages, they can be packaged and reusable so that users can easily install them. So that's really great for you as a person who owns the deployment to be able to programmatically manipulate things through the APIs, but obviously we don't think every end user is going to be able to do that. And so that's where the actual SP apps can come into play. And so both of those last two can be supported in Office 365, and they're both perfectly viable approaches. So again, just to reinforce what Veza said before and what I've said before, what do you really want to achieve? Don't look at it from a technology perspective. Don't look at it from a one-to-one mapping perspective, from a technical capability, really look at what the business is trying to achieve. And this is also a great opportunity, what we've seen both in our internal MSIT deployments, when we analyze those and look to move those to the cloud, and as well as some of these large customers, is you go in and you analyze and you find out that, well, there's out of these 25 full trust solutions that I have, five or six of them we built a long time ago and we haven't even used those in a while. And so it's a great opportunity to kind of cut away the cruft that maybe you've, the technical debt that you've accrued over time, and start off in a good clean spot moving forward. So think about what the business needs, think about what you're trying to achieve. And then we hear this often, but apps is the pattern for the cloud, not for on-premise. I don't need to worry about this for on-premise. Why would I even need to worry about this for my on-prem deployment? I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing today. There's a couple of reasons why I think you should be very careful thinking in that direction. The first major reason is, at some point, people in your business may decide that the cloud is a fiscally attractive option for them. It's cheaper for them to run it in the cloud. And so at some point, they may come to you and say, we need to move to the cloud. And that's going to be a jarring experience for you if you've continued to double down on the traditional methods. You're going to have a lot more work to do. The other reason is, the reason we built this model, the reason we've moved to this loosely coupled model, is really to facilitate our upgrades in Office 365, and to allow us to be able to upgrade with confidence, knowing that we're not breaking your solutions, knowing that we don't have to wait for you to do these large test passes against your code and make sure that your code runs. You can gain those same benefits on-prem as well. Unleash your IT pros from having to worry about that three-month project when they want to upgrade to Service Pack 1 or they want to upgrade to the next major version, to have all your devs retasked so that they can go focus on making sure that their solutions run in that next version. And so there's a huge amount of effort and labor and time friction, so to speak, that could be reduced by adopting these practices, even if you are on-prem. And we've seen that from a number of customers. So again, what if you could use the same model for on-prem and the cloud? What if you didn't care if it was on-prem or cloud? Forget about full trust solutions. And again, that's a little strong. I know that's a little bit strong. If you've got these things, you need to keep them running until you move to this new model. We understand that. But we really do want people to break out of jail and start moving to this new model. Embrace the unghosted deployment models, copying things into the content database. A lot of big advantages there. And run the code outside of the SharePoint context. So with that, wanted to give a slide here that kind of reinforces some of the talking points that we talked about a little earlier. In the old model, you would have a deployment for SharePoint 2007, let's just say. There's this upgrade to SharePoint 2010, and through that process, you had a lot of things that you needed to do. You needed to worry about hardware, you needed to worry about your customizations, So there was huge projects to do these upgrades, and we saw customers over and over have to go through those projects. But the big thing to remember, though, was you could plan it. I didn't have to worry about getting to 2010 until I was ready. Now, maybe there's pressure from the business, but that's a different kind of pressure. When we move now to this evergreen release cycle, is what we like to call it inside of Office 365, where we're deploying bits constantly, you don't really own that upgrade cadence. We're going to introduce new features even outside of major version upgrades, and your business is going to want those features. So you don't get to choose when that upgrade happens. You don't get to choose. We can't wait.
And the second dimension is obviously in on-premises. So if you take the on-premises, if you do app model in on-premises, you don't have to then you don't have to have those massive upgrade projects either. So it's not just Office 365. It's also the on-premises which will benefit from the app model transition, because we have backwards capable APIs. So if you'd used the remote APIs in 2013, whatever we will release, whatever it will be called, in the next version, those APIs will still work. And the ASP.NET application having a talk, or the provider-hosted app talking with SharePoint, that will still work. You don't have to, that customization itself doesn't block you to move on the following version, which is definitely one of the feedback what we're getting from many of the customers.
So I'm hearing you say that you could move to a more evergreen model even in your own deployment.
Precisely, precisely.
And we know developers very much are in denial when they first look at this, but our product roadmap is clear. I mean, this is definitely the direction that we're going. Many of you may remember when we introduced the feature framework and farm solutions, WSPs. I know I rolled my sleeves up. It was actually a great, I saw it as a great thing coming from developing on SharePoint 2003, where I had to do DDL files and make cab.exe and all those things. And so we had a huge amount of time that we spent learning about that feature framework. Or maybe when you had to learn CAML, that was my face when when I had to learn CAML. We're sorry about that.
Open up a schema XML file and try to figure out what is it actually doing.
That's right. And go build one in the UI and then try to export it and all those things. The great thing about SharePoint app development is if you know general web development, you pretty much already know SharePoint development as well. And so that helps you talk the same language with the other devs in your org. Maybe you've got Java devs, maybe you've got web front end UI devs. It really helps you be able to talk the same language as they are. So, and just to reinforce something we always hear, we hear this over and over and over again. Will you support farm solutions in Office 365? No, we won't. You can ask, we will tell you no. So they're deployed across the entire SharePoint farm. They'd impact multiple customers. Just the security vulnerability of being able to read data out of memory and things like that would lead us not to ever support this. So, and then we hear this over and over, and I'm going to be blunt. The way that we hear it is, hey, Microsoft, this is your third new app model in three releases. Why should we believe you now? And sometimes I would say that's valid feedback. But this is the model that we are investing in moving forward. You may have seen some of the announcements that we made at TechEd Europe around the Office 365 APIs and the Common Consent Framework and some of those new great things. Those are really platform capabilities that take this app model to the next level. If you think about some of our recent announcements, I know that we're very much focused on the SharePoint side of things for these sessions because we have a large number of SharePoint developers that are looking to move. But if you think about some of the recent announcements that we've made around Office on other platforms, you know, iPads and Android devices, that is the way that we will be able to get those types of extensions and capabilities in context in a cross-platform manner is using the standards-based approach. And so on the Office client side, that's really, really going to be key to our success moving forward. So the answer is we will continue to invest in this model. We will continue to iterate this model. This is the model moving forward. So a lot of the questions that we see both in our Yammer group and in general conversations, I can't do insert the thing you can't do here with the app model. And I'm going to be blunt. There are numerous things that might not be available. But if you look at the functional requirements and you look at what the customer is trying to accomplish, I think Veza, I've yet to see one that we haven't been able to come up with a way to do or reevaluate the requirement.
True, true. That's an alternative thing. So it's definitely going through the requirements, having a discussion, and then having having the customer or the person who's asking the requirements also to understand, why are you actually asking that? Are you asking that because you used to do that in SharePoint, or are you asking that because there's a clear business value on doing that? So, but quite, I would say 80-90% of the functionalities we can actually do with that model, just using an alternative route. Then there are certain scenarios which you might be blocked. And then it's on having that discussion that is it really needed? Should we go to the farm model? You can't go to the Office 365. If customer is fine, absolutely a valid approach still.
Yeah. Yeah, and with that, we're going to talk a little bit about some considerations that you have for your current farm solutions. And with that, I think I'm going to let Veza talk to those. He's closer to them, definitely.
Thanks, Dave. So so moving on the considerations, so this is more about what do you need to think if you still continue doing farm solutions. We do absolutely understand that there's a lot of customers, ongoing projects, there's new projects where you might want to do that. But then certain considerations to minimize the future pain, what you might go through when you do the transition to the app model. And these are the kind of key topics. We're going to then talk about the migrations, let's say solution and path for if you have these in the module 6 again. But something to consider when you do a farm solution. So as an example, there are recommendations related on how you should create content types and site columns. And we have slides coming up on that one after this line. We have recommendations how to do list templates. List templates are something, if you're really deep into that, those XMLs of SharePoint, in the list definition, you have a unique ID. And unique ID links to the schema XML, and that actually gives a deep dependency on that list instance to that schema XML of that list definition. So it's a really, really, if you retract the farm solution, that none of the lists would actually work. But then we do have an alternative way of doing that, which is absolutely fine. And then field types is one of the things what we definitely should avoid. Custom field types, and they do impact heavily on the migration or the functionality transformation on their solutions. Which reminded me, we talk about transformation, actually. The migration, when we use the word migration, that's more about content. Transformation is then more about the app model.
But things like field types and things of that nature are really about binding my customization and code into that content in a very intimate way where they are, let's just say, very hard to extract later.
Yes, absolutely. And you create a dependency on a full just real code and structure which is actually stored within the database. And that is a really difficult thing to then clean up afterwards. So let's talk about those options and recommendations. So let's start with a content type and site column. So what do we actually want to do and what is the recommendation? So rather than using feature framework elements and element XML file for content types and site columns, it would be worthwhile to actually create these using feature framework, feature receivers using code. Mm-hmm. There's two advantages of that. Well, the number one advantage is that you can actually easily write that code and you can do testing and debugging rather than just deploying an XML and crossing fingers, going to the site and have a look, did it actually, was it successful?
H result,
Wasn't good, let's rethink what is wrong with an XML. When you run code, you're able to run that using console application and then when it's ready, associate that to the feature receiver and you're good to go. The more kind of detailed, the reason for the recommendation is that whenever we have used feature framework elements to create content types and site columns, we will run into issues whenever we retract the farm solution. There are ways to minimize those issues, but eventually, if the content type was created using element XML file, there will be a marker within that content type in a content database, which is assuming that that element XML file is in the file system. And that might actually bite you in a longer run. I'm not going to go into too much details on when and how, but for example, when you upgrade on the following versions, when you might do content migration, export and import operations, you might run into these issues. So the recommendation is really, when you think about the classic approach and content type creation, we have a feature A, it is deployed to the file system as part of the farm solution. The content type definitions are in element XML files associated to the feature itself. And what we do is that we kind of create an association. Those provisioned content types, they have a dependency on that XML in the file system. To be precise, you can actually, if there's content which is created using that content type, you can actually retract the solution. Content will remain, content type will remain, but that's only if there's content. Now, you might end up in an orphan situation. There's multiple other scenarios which you might run into. So this is something which you should be avoiding. The solution for this one is then taking a slightly alternative route within your farm solution. So in your WSP package, you still have the feature A, but then what you do is that you actually create the content types using code, using feature receiver. In the feature activation, and not in the installation, in the activation, you would actually create the content types directly to the content database. And that would mean that you wouldn't have any dependency on the feature XML files or the element XML files. When you retract the solution, the content types will still remain in a content database. Mm-hmm. Somebody might actually say that this is a bug within the product, but we're just telling you how it is, and we're telling you, obviously, how you should be transforming your code, even with the farm solutions, so you would avoid challenges within the future. Moving on the recommendation, the list template. So that was one of the things on the list. What is the challenge within the list template? So you really should avoid using custom list templates. And trust me, we know that it's kind of an awkward situation. We released the list template designer in Visual Studio, in Visual Studio tooling for 2013. And now we're saying it's not actually recommended to do that. The wizard is awesome, and the guys in the Visual Studio team did a good job, but then it has a long-term impact on the data, what is actually stored within the list. The problem is that the custom list template has a unique identifier, and all of the list instances which were created using that custom list template then have a dependency on this these files. If we retract the solution, all of those lists are broken. And that will then cause you a challenge. So how do I migrate that data away? How do I move that data to the out-of-the-box list instances using out-of-the-box document libraries or custom lists? What you should be looking into is rather using, for example, code to provision the list instance. So it could be, if it's a one instance, for example, one list instance within the site, you might have a feature which is creating that list instance using code, and then applying the needed, let's say, views and columns and content types and whatever settings that list template was applying as well. It requires some code, we do understand that, but it would be in content database. It wouldn't have a dependency on that feature XML file within the file system. The second option would be to use custom schema XML. That's a nice attribute, what we actually have in a list instance element. And that would mean that on provisioning time, we use a schema XML, an alternative schema XML, but we wouldn't leave any dependencies on the site itself to those XMLs in the file system. And then if we think about, quite often people are asking, okay, but what if we need to have a Contoso library? I want to create a new Contoso library, you go to the create, you want to have that template available. We would recommend to you to then think about, could you solve that same functionality by having a list edit event receiver, which is associated whenever a document library is added, out-of-the-box document library, that list edit event receiver would then modify that library based on your business requirements. That would be one way of tackling that. Or then move to the app model techniques.
Or move to the app model, and your list or your library would actually be an app, and then your app could
create out-of-the-box
artifact.
So there's multiple options here, and we're going to, as said, there will be additional guidance in MSDN. I think the timing is in mid-January to go live with the guidance, so which is really good. The final thing what we had is a custom field challenge. So this is more about do not use custom fields within your farm solution. And we do understand that we have examples of using custom fields in MSDN for farm solutions. At the time those examples were added to MSDN, the considerations were not about the transforming the DAP model. They're quite old articles, and they're still valid. But now if we think about the future of the SharePoint, we should think about minimizing the impact for transformation to the DAP model. So sooner or later, it might be in 10 years, somebody might say that, well, we have this SharePoint. What if we transition to the new app model techniques or to the cloud?
Yeah.
And this is where you really want to think about, for example, just using field controls on the presentation. As a classic example, somebody implemented a custom field because they used wanted to have a different presentation for the data in the page layouts. Well, do not actually create a custom field, create just a custom field control. So the data is stored in a native field, but then it's presented using a custom field control. Or then use a client-side rendering, which is something we're going to show today, I think in module 2 or 3, can't remember. One of the modules. But it's a technology which is available to combine with your farm solution as well, to override the presentation, override the editing of that data. Really, really powerful functionality.
I want to follow up on something that Veza said just a minute ago, and I hear this over and over and over again with people say, well, you have documentation on that thing. So field controls is just one example here, or custom fields. Service applications, yes, we have MSDN documentation on how to build a service application. The way I look at it is, our MSDN documentation is typically very low level about product capabilities. What can the product do? What types of extensibility are there? I look at it like in my owner's manual for my car, it tells me about my parking brake, but that doesn't mean I should pull my parking brake going 55 miles an hour going down the highway. So just because it's in our documentation doesn't mean you have free rein and that forever you will never have a problem with any of this. And so some of these things that we are calling out, we hear that a lot, that, hey, your documentation says I can do this. Well, you can. These sessions are intended to help you understand what the impact of making that decision would be in the long term.
so that you can minimize the impact. Yeah. So definitely walking through and explaining why and what is the chosen path. As an architect, you need to understand the impact of the chosen decisions. And then there are multiple different paths. Unfortunately, it would be actually, when you think about SharePoint, it would be interesting if we would only have a one path, the right path, and everybody would follow the right path. If you think about SharePoint, we have a long history. That's quite often the reason why we then have a multiple different routes to provide, for example, different provisioning techniques or whatever. And we haven't actually, maybe we should have removed some of those functionalities away. But anyway, looking back on the before we started the module, so the recommendations, so really start gradually moving on the app model. It's a good point and it's a good practice. And you can start combining your farm solutions to the app model techniques. Mm-hmm. And with the app model, we definitely mean more than just the SharePoint apps. In many cases, actually, what we see is that we're provisioning sites using the app model techniques, and you don't actually have any apps installed on site. You're using alternative options. We really want you to do that, so you're able to align with the product and service roadmap. And this is where our investments are done. Concentration on the end users, what is the functionality that the end users are seeing, how can we actually transform that? And then as a final point, I would also sandbox solutions. They do have a long-term impact on our customizations. And especially if we think about declarative sandbox solution, we can definitely achieve all the declarative sandbox solution functionalities or let's say capabilities using app model techniques, using the remote provisioning technique, which will definitely have more information in MSDN pretty soon as well. And we're gonna show that one in practice as well. So good. All of the samples, we're going to do a lot of demos during the day. This was more about the introduction of the day, what we're going to go through. All of the samples, all of the guidance, what we have is already available in akams.com/office-dev-bmp. Well, right now it's a lot of samples. We're missing a lot of that internal insights, what we're talking today. But a lot of this will be part of the MSDN in mid-January. And we will obviously keep on updating the developer patterns and practices guidance as well. Really, really great source for you to find details related on how would I achieve X and Y and Z using that model techniques. Other things, really, you want to go to the dev.office.com. This is it was released earlier this year or during the autumn. So there's really massive amount of additional guidance on all of these topics. And this is kind of a one place. If you want to go to a one location where you can find everything about the Office 365 development or app model development, go here. We've linked all the samples. We've done all the getting started capabilities here as well. And then as a final thing, before we have a 10-minute break, please give us feedback. We don't have one of the things what we see quite often is that, well, we're giving feedback, but we don't see progress. We are collecting that feedback. Obviously, we don't have infinite resources, so it might take a while, but we're actually listening. A lot of the stuff what you put in the Office SP Dev user voice, or in the Stack Overflow, or in the Yammer network, we're listening. We will definitely get that feedback in, and you will see a lot of improvements in the near future. And that's all we're going to do in this module.
I was answering questions in the Q&A. Sorry about that.
No worries. So that's all we're going to do in the first module. This is more about the introduction of things, so kind of going through the approach. And then in the following modules, we have quite a few demos, quick demos to show you capabilities, show you nice stuff, show you good stuff. And then walking through this functionality is what we've been saying in here. So let's have a 10-minute break and continue after that.
Yep. See you guys in 10. Appreciate it.